Powerful. Well, it's going to be an interesting night. Let's pod that down. I understand we got Ginny and Greg here. Are you guys here?
Hi, Bob.
Yeah, I'm sorry that you guys... Hi, Greg. I'm sorry you guys don't get good reception. Just missed a powerful, powerful 12 minutes or so. When you get a chance, listen to the archives. Big march into the scene, because tonight in 2 hours we're going to be going over to Jeff Wren's for an hour, and then we'll be back. And you guys can all come over to Jeff Wren's with us. Oh, Carolyn's signaling to me something. Oh, yeah, you're on delay. Isn't that amazing? Listen to that. Let's listen to Carolyn appreciate Bobby Martin. She's on delay. You need the phone? Bobby Martin sailing falsetto in the background. It ended?
Yeah.
Now that was Bobby Martin. That's his style.
Amazing.
That's the falsetto in the background that's going through that second song. I urge you to study these two pieces. We just played them when you get a chance. Shane's on. Okay, Shane. Now, we only got a couple minutes because we're going to play some... I have to finish up Mum 16. Then we can all talk. And then the third hour, when we go away, we're going to start Mum 21. And Dale can play that for the whole hour while we're gone over to listen to Jeff. And you guys can all call in and harass. Now, Jeff called us to try to move us forward a couple hours, but we can't. We're doing the show here, Jeff. We're all scheduled. We got guests lined up. We got testimonials. Everybody's there. We can't shift that rapidly on a Thursday. Not on a Thursday, Jeff. Okay, so Greg or Shane or anybody who has something to say quickly?
Hello. That's quick.
Yeah. What do you want to say, Shane? Anything?
I wanted to discuss a topic on dupes of non-physical, which has the theme creating with the spoken word. I wanted to talk about that.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of good posts on that thread. So, Will, if we can start that in the second hour, unless Ginny and them have something to talk about. See, it's 5:16, so we go 35. Yeah, we got about 2 minutes to talk. So, Greg and Ginny, why did you come in early? Did you have something you wanted to mention quickly?
Greg.
Oh, my daughter just texted me today. She's at university. She's 18 years old, and she said, the text said, everyone around me has the flu, not me. I got the drops. These are the shit.
Yeah. Now, Greg, you forwarded that to me. I saw it earlier today, and I'm just thrown by this disgusting grammar these kids got. This is the shit. I mean, this is a nice 18-year-old girl, just fresh out of debutante land, and she's talking like a gangster. What's up with this, Greg? Are we supposed to accept this?
This is about the highest compliment she can give something by calling it the shit.
See, they live tactile. They live ambivalent. They know it could turn to good or bad any moment, so they got it all covered. They're speaking in all directions at once. That's what's going on there.
Yeah.
It's very, if you understand that, you can handle it. You can take the swearing.
And then, that's right.
Go
that's
ahead.
Right. But again, it's the highest compliment she can give it in her ghetto talk. So I thought that was great.
That is great. I mean, there she is. Everybody's sick. What was the last words?
That she attributed not having the flu to the drops, that she put those drops together.
Well, we'll accept that. We'll accept that. We have no idea if it had anything to do with the flu or anything, but we'll take that. We'll take those credits. We can use that. We need all the help we can get. I don't need any help, do we? Because everybody's going to think the drops work. See, that's the other part of this. This proof they're non-physical. Everybody actually thinks the drops are doing all this stuff. It's the biggest anomaly in my life is living in Iondom, where everybody believes it's happening. So, well, very good, Greg. That is an important testimonial, I'd like to get her. I'd like to get her thoughts on it, though. That might screw things up. She might start thinking about it too much. But I'd like to analyze why she thinks it is. So, bring her on sometimes, Greg, and we'll put that we'll squeeze the lemon on that shit statement. Okay. Would you guys go away already? Anyways, here we go. We're going into, let's finish up Mum number 16, recorded on June 13, 2011. And we'll get that clear to the deck so then Bill can go to Mum 21, which is the next one with McLuhan speaking. The entity McLuhan will be featured on Mom, 21. All right, so here we go. We'll let this run for most of this hour. Hope you enjoy it. And then we'll be back to talk all the issues and answer the emails in the second hour. Just a minute, just checking the operation here. Checking the devices. Bring that over here. Enjoy it. And then we'll be back to talk all the issues and answer the emails in the second hour. Forget that.
Looping.
Yeah, we know you'll be bring that down. Then we go like this. To get rid of that, knock that out. No, we don't knock that out. We knock this out. Knock that off. Get the, rid of the looping. And here we go.
You want him metaphorically every single time he needed a new bottle of wine. And, yeah, he couldn't handle it. But I'm sure whatever the reason is, you know what I mean?
No, he handled it, but he registered the pain of it as he went through it. And so he had some physical pains.
Right. He needed to increase his jiu-jitsu to be able to not have the pain overtake his third-dimensional ability to play with the whole reality as it was defining itself. Indefinitely.
Yeah.
And so when language is completely obsolete, all we have is the phenomena that we can't quantify, which is our day-to-day, which is every time you blink, which is every time you move your eyes, which is everything that's going on in your mind, my whole life flashed ahead of me. This is the language of now. This is the collage-based nature. The only way to get an understanding of, let's say you have 80,000 gigs of movies, are you going to go through a Google list based on actor, director, genre, or any other book-like index to find out what's in there? You don't have enough time to do that.
Yeah, now, Richard, hold it. Ion says we got more non-physical than we can use. You already have way more than enough. So that's what's happened technically. We got way more than we can use.
You use the empirical definitions in a Bruce Lee martial arts, and there's a reason why that's a pun. You use it where you say, if we redefine misinterpretation, then that means misinterpretation becomes the focus of our definition. And if we, you know, again, it's back to the asymptote, which is like, you know, yes, the 3.5 dimension that you guys are hinting at and the wall between archetype and cliche. Just, yeah, don't be proprioceptively biased to acknowledge the fact that there's more that you'll never know. That you could get an idea to understand, but if you're biased, you're never even going to get that opportunity in time where it matters, which is why Marshall needed wine.
Yeah, but you're just talking about the obsolete phase of the satellite tetrad. Obsolescence is language for images.
Let's get it down to something that you can use. So, the SWIFT code for HSBC Bank Bermuda.
Just a minute, hey Brian, I think you need to mute Brian because we hear the wind.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll point the mic in another direction.
Not Brian. Okay, someone else. Yeah.
So the HSBC Bank of Bermuda, you can do corporate or the investment department, would be BBDABMHMINV. So that's something that you can know that is within the SWIFT department.
He just gave some national coding for the SWIFT electronic fundraiser.
That's for HSBC
right.
Bermuda.
Right. And then
now
the BD, what's the BDD?
Corporate.
What was the BD reference? What was that referring to?
That's the actual code.
Oh, okay. Who's this
so
message
if you have
for?
That, you can ask.
Now, he just asked, who's this message you're giving for, Ion?
No, you were talking about SWIFT, and then you were talking about
yeah.
You can't know nothing, and the motherfucker won't let you find out nothing.
Yeah, Richard, you're emphasizing the know nothing too much.
And so, by God, we'll show you what nothing can know.
Right, well, nothing, no thing. So everything.
No, he said we can know. With the extension on physical, we can know.
Yeah, but when you put in the blind or the death-hating reading and you say nothing and then you say no thing and then you say I know and then you know because you have a nose that can sense it and then goes back to, like, senses and figure reversal that the deaf cause because it can resonate with the numbers, so they're painting the invisible.
Don't go through too many words. Why? We don't need to find to follow so many images. Just say a few words. Like, are you saying that I know can become N-O? If you know something, everything that becomes illimited.
You can go up and down or left and right with the term and not know how it's spelt or sounds.
And that's great.
Whatever the term. Yeah,
and that's
useful. Do you mean the fish?
The fish. You mean the fish, Richard, 3 hours ago?
No, smelt is a fish.
Oh, yeah. Smelt.
I don't know specifically. you can apply the same sort of filter, whether it's fishing for information or fish inside water, and whichever ways you want to take those two terms simultaneously in every direction at once, is the nothing and everything that's always ongoing. And I'm just saying you just can't lock yourself out to knowing that that is what you don't know but is there.
But you don't need to say all that. You don't need to say all that, Richard.
Okay.
Hey, Richard, there's something else you don't know. Butterfield Trust, the one in Bermuda, if you have this information, it might be real handy. Its SWIFT code would specifically be BNTBBMHSXXX. There's something else you don't know.
Yeah, he gave a secret code to the oligarchy.
Butterfield and Sons Limited, NT, might be a little cross with that information.
Yeah. He just gave out the secret of secrets of all financial transactions, the heart of the Queen's basket.
Yeah, but that stuff is its own undoing, isn't it? Like, from what we're sort of getting at.
No, not yet.
Well, it
depends on whether or not your rectum's sore or not.
Yeah, Vin, you got a point there.
Okay, warning, the last call, we got 12 minutes left, so everybody run to their topic they want to get. We only got 12 minutes left.
What were you referring to back a while ago to MJ's birthday or something?
Yeah, someone forwarded me the that notice, and then you made a comment. You forwarded out that and this was forwarded to me that it was spam, and then I did a little investigation and I found out that it was MJ's birthday yesterday, and it seemed to be MJ's language, and he told me that he attempted a coup in a private email yesterday, so I assumed that that MJ originated that message about the garden, and that's what Ion's referring to when he talks about the trolls and the tolls and the gates.
Right.
So what's your question then?
I didn't know that. I was just,
Look. What didn't you know? That it was MJ's birthday? Is that what you learned right now?
That I did know it was MJ's birthday and didn't know where it originated from and that it...
I'm not getting this. What are you saying you want to know and what did you learn?
I learned that it was MJ's birthday yesterday.
From my email? From my email you learned that?
No, from what you just spoke.
Oh, okay, just now. So you didn't know why I was saying birthday party in the email that I sent out. That's what your question was.
I didn't get an email from you.
Oh, so why, what would into,
so
why are you bringing me into it?
You said that earlier, I didn't know what you were saying.
Oh, right, okay, yeah, I know. You didn't even know about the email. Okay, so yeah, I responded to the email today by saying, so MJ, did you have a good birthday? What happened? I said, what happened to your birthday party? Something like that. And I signed it, and I had at the bottom, I don't know what I put at the bottom, some sentence. So I thought you knew that email. But I'm just suspecting that nobody knew who made that.
Exactly. So that was my next question. But I think you answered it, that MJ originated that?
Yes, Sasha told me. Sasha told me that Brian said it was MJ, and then I had a private correspondence argument with MJ yesterday, and he pointed out yesterday was his birthday, and I go, oh, yeah, it was his birthday. This was a birthday party notice he put out, because then he told me later yesterday that he apologized for trying to have a coup, and it says at the bottom of the email, yes, this is a coup. So it really points to MJ as the source of this email, unless someone else was involved. We don't know. That's all I was saying. We seem to know it was MJ.
I was just asking because it's, you know, a mystery to me. I mean, it ended up, went into my spam file, and I wasn't even aware of it until Joyce asked me about this email that she had got.
Well, what amazes me is you guys actually phoned the number and listened and talked on the space. Did MJ show up? What happened?
Not that I'm aware of that MJ showed up, but it was lively conversation. It was fun.
Did anybody that's not the usual suspect show up that you know of?
I'm gonna say no.
Yeah, it was you, Brian, and Joyce, and Sasha, and some
Anna, Sandra.
Sandra Schmidt showed up. Sandra showed up?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Well, when there's a coup happening, Sandra will get interested, so she was definitely going to show up.
Well, it tweaked my interest. I was like, what is this? What is this? I'll have to go have an adventure with it. And we chatted, and just it was nice to get together again on the conference call, and touch base with the...
Did everybody... See, it sounds like you engaged in obsolete media, The Voice, and ignored the medium that got you there, the email, because was there any discussion of what the email meant and any conclusion?
Just that it was inevitable, Bob.
That is in the email, too. He says it's inevitable.
That was... Yeah. We chatted about it and laughed about it initially, like, what is going on? What is this?
No one had any cool and nobody showed
what
up.
Was going on, except that we showed up. Yeah.
It's the old line. What if they gave a war and nobody showed up? Well, what if they gave a coup and everybody showed up, but the coupsters didn't show up?
Exactly. We couldn't be bothered about the coup.
Because there's nothing to coo about.
Yeah, that's right. It actually is more appropriate to today that there's no coo
cooing more like pigeons. And
yeah. Belinda the Hen, a major figure in Finding His Way. But I tell you, much fighting went on behind the scenes between me and MJ. There was a coup attempt at a battle.
Really?
Yeah, there was an actual attempt made. And Ion had the front row seat on that.
Well, no god pays tolls to enter their own garden.
Yeah, it was quite nebulous, I guess.
Not for me. It was a serious, all-out, no-holds-barred battle. It's still going on today. Got some more emails. It's still continuing.
You'll see.
Yeah, it was a distraction by MJ to have you guys run over in that field and wait for a battle, and then the battle happened over in this field, and you guys didn't get to see it.
Well, are you going to give us a blow-by-blow account then?
No, it was a quick knockout. You can't topple me and Ion. You know, it's just not going to work. But he bounced back. His team came back. They're making overtures.
We got to kind of learn about Zuthus.
That's right. That was new to me, and I looked it up.
That was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was interesting.
I didn't know who Ion's relatives were. That was the... It might give a clue of who else could start coming through.
Can I ask Ion a quick question about magnets?
Yeah.
What are magnets? What are magnets?
Ian, describe the functionality or something of, I can't say what, Richard. Describe the magnetism.
Proximity of a magnitudinal force within a vibrational frequency that is either embraced or rejected.
Yeah, now, Richard, McLuhan said that Joyce made whole universe, Finnegan's Wake, out of two words. There are basically two words in that sentence. Ion plays with the polarity between two words, vibrational magnetism, rejected or accepted. Notice the binaryism of that statement. It is sort of meta on top of meta there, what Ion does. When you understand that's what he's
that
doing.
A magnet has a north and a south pole, which are in opposition to either embracing or repelling one another.
Now, I am putting this word.
Opposites and opposites attract.
Yeah, and you use the word magnetitude or magnitude. What was that? Magnitude?
Mm-hmm.
Magnitude, that's the measurement of it.
So, like, with recycling magnets, if you had two opposite sides and you had three magnets, could the one in the middle continue a perpetual, unending source of energy? Okay, okay.
Isn't that how electric motors work?
Right.
Okay. No, I'm just trying to go on like the recycling and repurposing and progress through repurposing and recycling. That's my angle of approach, I guess, right now.
Yeah, you're trying to triangulate to see where you are in relation to the motor.
Brilliant. Yeah. Totally. Totally. And then, you know, I would imagine by triangulation, I mean, you'd need two on each side and one in the middle, and the one in the middle would continue to reciprocate the energy that the other two would be reciprocating back to the one in the middle.
Is that accurate, Ion?
Close enough.
So we don't have to get too precise. Because then you get bogged down in the speech mechanism. Look at the tetrad for percept, for verbum. Maybe we should end with that tetrad, which is now on the McLuhan site, the Maman site.
I love the Maman site. There's so much stuff there. It's incredible.
Yeah, it is very good what dark matter does and Andrew do.
Yeah. And like the,
does Andrew go by Chip Body, by the way?
Yeah, he's
Chip Body.
Well, okay, I'm going to get out, but great talking to all of you.
Hey, Biffle, if you can, let me just do the tetrad on verbum, and maybe we'll get Ion to talk about it. Can you wait?
Yeah, I'll definitely wait for that.
Yeah, okay, we look up Mom. Just a second. And we touched this at the last week, so I'd like to get Ion's comment on McLuhan's tetrad on verbum, which can be defined as one word or the whole phenomenon of language. Let's see. Did you see Buzz Kosin's YouTubes are on there?
I'm ambivalent about him, but I do appreciate his automatic writing style of creating that type of visual linguism.
Yeah, and he does pick good verbal stuff. It gets blurred sometimes.
He's just an antenna with outgrowths. He's just lucky.
Yeah, he's lucky. Automatic writing, automatic editing. So, hey, Ion, there's a tetrad on McLuhan in one of his first articles. He gives a tetrad on the laws of equilibrium, then metaphor, then the tetrad itself, then verbum, which he defines as utterance. And he says, verbum, so we think of this maybe as a grunt, intensifies and crystallizes percept, and he has a dash, as word, in brackets, thing. So percept as word. So you've got your whole vibrational mechanism, environment going on, your vibrational frequency, all the senses, not just acoustic, but if you make it utter it, then it becomes a word, it becomes limited, and becomes a thing. And McLuhan said words are unobservable. But anyways, it becomes
back upon the sensorium.
Are you talking about Bucky? Are you talking about the Bucky Fuller inference?
That maybe, but that's just hold it. then it obsolesces the merely sensory via perceptual interplay. So an utterance or a percept as word thing obsolesces what you, where you thought you were, and loosens things up. So that's the service. It creates an interplay. Even
today,
though
the environment itself becomes the artifact.
Did you say the what was the word before environment?
The creator of the environment
becomes the artifact. Right, you become what you behold, and then the verbum. What?
We form our tools, and then our tools form us.
Yeah. And what's interesting is
we
form our words, and then our words form us.
Quite extraordinary.
What'd you say?
They're prepared for learning are quite extraordinary.
Who's they? They are prepared for learning.
The consequence for learning are quite extraordinary.
And that's learning as a service and a disservice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Have you ever read the Bucky Fuller letter, Bob? Come on.
Yeah, that's further down there. But just want to say, we're saying the what did you say?
Richard, of the images of the images of the consequences.
This is what you got to hear, Richard and Scott, on the album, The Medium is a Massage, 1968. It says first we shape the tools, and then the tools shape us. Then later on the album, it says we shape the tools, and then the tools ape us. That's important. It goes from shaping to aping us.
Yeah.
You could say the Android meme is a digital phase. The tools ape us.
Yeah.
Right. So then the retrieval part of verbum is transference of power from things to word as vortex. That's hyphenated. Word as vortex. Transference of power from things to word as vortex. That's what's retrieved. That sounds like what Ian was saying.
Yeah, we shape our speech, and our speech shapes us.
And then our speech apes us.
Yeah,
but if you really got what Marshall was trying to say, it would obsolesce this whole bullshit stuff you're going through if you get to the point of, I want to map a new terrain rather than chart old landmarks.
No, that's true. That's true. The last word in the laws of media is about we're entering into unchartable territory. That's right. So this is what the flip point is. The flip point of verbum is it reverses into the conceptual. So the intensified and crystallized percept as word thing flips into the conceptual, which in brackets it says replay of meaning minus the experience. You start to not have the experience because you're limited by the sensory input.
Or Hitchens' version of it.
Hitchens. Is that Christopher Hitchens or a physicist?
Oh, just those that package and give are in charge of giving the perception, like the mass media.
No, let's just ask them. Who's Hitchens, Ion?
Hitchens. Please yourself.
Oh, so I looked that up because that's not Christopher Hitchens. He's got an EN. So then we go to the Bucky. So that's the tetrad and verbum, and we go to the Bucky Fuller letter. Hey, Scott, if you look at Mom, there's a new documentary of crap from CBC on McLuhan you might want to look at.
On today's Mom page?
Yeah, it's on page 2 now. There's so much stuff being piled on. Trying to find the Bucky Fuller letter.
So as you're looking for the Bucky Fuller letter, just to clarify, Ion, you weren't referring to Christopher Hitchens. It's Hitchens and another, sounds like that, but something else. Okay.
Dude.
Hitchens is ENS. Cool.
Bob, the letter you're looking for is September 17th, 1964.
Yeah, see, Ion knows what he's looking at. Do you believe it's...
That you don't know is amazing to astounding to us.
Oh, no, I know the letter. I read it earlier today.
That's the one that you're looking for. So
I know where it is. There's so much here, I have to find it. I'm on page 2.
Be it.
Yeah, sorry. Trying to find it.
So face in the
wind. Hey, I'll bet even Ion can't tell you everything Marshall said on what page number.
Yeah, he doesn't know Marshall as much as me. He doesn't want to know it. He considers that my major handicap.
Well, if you listen to Marshall, Marshall didn't know it either.
I know more about Marshall.
He'd undo it faster than you could do it.
Yeah.
That's a, he makes it, he went almost always out of his way to explain that he had nothing to do with what he was actually saying.
That's
we
right.
think y'all starting to agree with our entire fallacy.
Exactly.
Still looking.
Do I like VHS
searching.
Ah, there it is. Okay.
Searching.
So here, Marsh McLuhan writes from 3 Witchwood. He didn't live at Witchwood at that point. Now, this is a parallel world letter. Now this is it. I bet you Dark Matter didn't even notice this. This is written September 17, 1964. He lived on Wells Hill. But this is address 3 Witchwood, which he didn't move into until 1968.
Well, maybe he had his eyes on the
phone. Oh, wait a minute. Did you post this, Ion? Who posted this? Okay. Dear Bucky, I was not at all happy about, okay. There's these, a meeting on the boats, on a boat in the Mediterranean that the Akistes, Doxiades, he's a Greek architect, he had a journal called Akistes. They meet in the middle of the Mediterranean every summer. It was called the Delos Seminar. So McLuhan went to it first in 63. He missed it in 64, probably because he was dealing with the fame that Understanding Media created. So he says, Dear Bucky, I was not at all happy about missing the Delos Seminar this summer. There is too much on the plate here. You use that phrase all the time. We got too much on the plate. Have had a good deal of luck in analyzing various problems lately. I enclose a note on one of these. If one says that any new technology creates a new environment, that is better than saying the medium is the message. The content of the new environment is always the old one. The content is greatly transformed by the new technology. So this is his idea that Thompson runs with, the old environment becomes an art form. So this is what he's claiming, this is when he discovered it. Supersonic.
Poor Irwin.
Yeah, poor Irwin. Supersonic flight will create a new environment which makes our present cities somewhat useless. In fact, if they are to be approached within any convenient distance at all, they will have to be roofed over, in quotes, roofed over. Supersonic takeoff and landing alike blow the glass out of a city, so your Dymaxium dome becomes a necessity, just as much as the road is a necessity for the wheel. One environment creates another. Now, Playboy magazine featured pictures of these big domes over the cities in December 67 or December 68 Playboy. Big article. But here's Marshall talking. He's aware of Bucky's idea 3 or 4 years before. Then Marshall says, would appreciate your suggestions about readings in the matter of technology as creator of environment. Now, get the satire here. He's the only one writing on it. And he's asking Bucky if he knows of anybody else writing what Marshall writes. Are you getting this? He says,
Pen from Marshall, exactly.
Yeah. Would appreciate your suggestions about readings in the matter of technology as creator of environment. Today, the environment itself becomes the artifact. The consequences for learning are quite extraordinary. The prepared environment for learning separates the old curriculum. Warm regards, Marsh McLuhan, 3 Witchwood.
That's exactly what Iron was getting at, though, saying the creation of learning is quite extraordinary.
But when you know,
learning becomes obsolete, doesn't it?
Well, fuck yeah.
And that means you would sound very learned, Scott. That means you could play with words and become very
learned, and you'd become a manipulator. You wouldn't
right.
be learning, you'd be knowing.
And you'd be knowing a lot of words, and be saying a lot of words, and that's Manipian satire.
And you wouldn't have to bank on the rear view mirror conception of your place that he is. Because now your mystery landscape would be obsolete and retrieved, and the perceptual or perspective that you gauge would be from the new environment that you have created, not that's been crammed down your damn throat hole.
Right. Now, here's Bucky Fuller. Dark Matter put on some quotes. Here's Bucky Fuller, who doesn't recognize the satire that McLuhan is making of Bucky in that letter. Because here's Bucky. He says, McLuhan has never made any bones about his indebtedness to me as the original source of most of his ideas.
Oh, man. The fame game? Really?
The what game?
The fame game.
Yeah.
It's not whether you win or lose. It's how you place the blame.
That's right. And he said
he was just creating his reality the way he liked it.
Yeah, he said the Global Village idea was my concept. You know, McLuhan more or less got it from Wyndham Lewis. But anyways, Bucky thinks it's his idea. He says, I don't think he has an original idea. Sounds like Bob.
As of yet, we're still hoping to get a quorum if Bob can get an original thought. That'd be delicious, wouldn't it?
And this is a letter he's writing to his aide, who is a CIA guy. Mark Stallman's done a lot of research into Mr. Applewhite. He's a CIA handler of Bucky Fuller, and he's writing this to Applewhite, Mr. Applewhite, on July 10th, 1973. He's had it with this McLuhan stuff. He says, I don't think McLuhan has an original idea. Not one. McLuhan says so himself. He's really a... What?
I thought this was McLuhan writing to Applewhite, saying McLuhan in third person, but this is Fuller writing to Applewhite, talking about McLuhan.
Yeah, and saying that McLuhan got everything from Fuller. He's saying McLuhan hasn't had one original idea. And then he says McLuhan brags about this, says so himself. And then he says McLuhan's really a great enthusiast, a marvelous popularizer and teacher. He has an irrepressible sense of the histrionic, like no one I've ever known other than Frank Lloyd Wright. My concept of a mechanical extension of man, he has that in quotes, my concept of the, quote, mechanical extension of man is the basis for his talk of the electronic or electrical extensions of man. McLuhan has always been the first to say, quote, Bucky is my master. I am only his disciple.
That's right. I want to hear a big round of applause for Bucky Fuller. That guy was awesome. And if more human creators lined up behind that guy's modality of approach to genius, we'd be... creating much more satisfying.
Now, Scott, why do you always hoik up your rearview mirror and step in the shit? You're not getting the point here. Bucky's totally
I get
fooled.
The point, Bob. I get the point. I just want to stand up for the guy because the guy was incredible. You seem to think that if nobody matches up to McLuhan, therefore they're not worth it.
Simultaneously, you don't have the whole picture.
Yeah.
Say that again?
We don't
unless
have the whole picture.
You see both ground and figure simultaneously, you do not have the whole picture.
Yeah, when you can appreciate McLuhan and still appreciate Bucky, Bob, then you have a bigger picture.
Oh, I appreciate Bucky. I just know his limitations.
Where's Lewis Mumford in all this?
Oh, we
right.
don't even... He
right
got kicked
Adler.
Out in the quarterfinals.
Right.
He lost
right
in the quarterfinals.
Right behind Adler.
Yeah, Adler. Mortimer Adler and Jockey Lewis. and Walter Wrong and everybody else they celebrate over at Fordham University in Lance Straight's class and the Meteorology Association. Just to dig it for them.
They come in, it's like, Norm, and they give him a beer.
Yeah. Okay, so here's a letter from Bucky Fuller to John Ragsdale, editor of the Biophilist, November 7th, 1966. He says, regarding McLuhan, I have known him for 5 years. That's 1961. I had the letters of when they first meet. He acknowledges use, that's me talking. So Bucky says, McLuhan acknowledges use of my concept and phrasing of the mechanical and other extensions of man, which was first published in the predictions in my preface to the Nine Changes to the Moon, 1938, and also in my charts in 1938, and republished in my book, The Epic of Industrialization in 1940. I speak about such phenomena as a scientist. McLuhan speaks as a professor of literature. He is well-read and has good insights. And he is skilled in verbal dueling. I greatly enjoy his foot and rapier work. I have been present when hostile audience thought they had him on the run, only to discover themselves chasing themselves up dead-end alleys as he himself reappeared far down another highway.
I'd say McLuhan's approach to writing books is indicative of a lot of things where he's like, look, I understand. Am I going to linearly commit to this specialized form to give you a quantifiable empirical proof that you don't deserve to have? No, I won't.
That's what R.P. McKinnon's trying to tell you.
That's my wife said.
Mm-hmm. Rhetoric in the Middle Ages. Come on, y'all got to do your...
R.P. McKinnon? R.P. McEwen.
Hey, to me it's all about...
I just quoted the main... Now listen, you guys. Hey, listen. You're a fucking student here, okay? Remember that. Ion just quoted the main guy that McLuhan used in his PhD thesis back in 39-40. I think it's R.P. McEwen you're saying, right, Ion?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty good. Now, you guys know that. You can't cite that guy.
It's Berkeley 1914.
is that not in the Ginkle Press book, the Trivium according to the knowledge of
that
time of Thomas Nash?
Yeah, that's in that thesis.
It's not in the Secret Diary of William Byrd.
Uh-oh.
It's not a contest. I'm just clarifying.
Yeah.
Well, by God, know what you're talking about when you're going up against us.
And so Bucky ends his 1966 letter. I like McLuhan personally, respect him, and appreciate the respect and friendliness he shows toward my own work. Unquote. So the point is that Marshall was pointing out that a person like Bucky Fuller is evoked by the electric environment. That's what Bucky didn't know. He didn't know that he was an extension of the numbing effect of electric environment. And since this is your class, I will end with those words.
With the modern media are engaged in the Luciferian conspiracy against the truth.
That's a quote from McLuhan that was posted earlier this week on Maui.
Lucifer, the bringer of light.
Yes. So I'm glad that everybody showed up. I'm just going to turn this off. Let's just check how many people are here right now. I've got to take this off. Take that. Did you guys hear that?
No.
One moderator and seven participants. And so we end and move towards a new beachhead. Thank you, Ion. Maybe we should dismiss Ion. Ion, you can make an exit on your own.
We are complete.
Usually JW doesn't show up at these. Is JW there? Okay, he's gone. Okay, guys, are you all happy?
Great show, Bob.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. We got a lot of food for thought there.
Yeah, might be worth re-listening.
Yeah. Andrew stopped tweeting a couple hours ago. Either he has to go do teaching stuff or he's not interested. I don't know, but at least he let us do a bit. He did tweet early parts of Ion's appearance.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I'll talk to you guys later.
Bye, Bob.
Bye.
Okay, bye, everybody.
Bye.
Well, let's see if there's any more sound. 9 seconds on the recording left.
Oh, that ended. And we got a minute 10 seconds left, so perfect. So that was the end of seminar number 60, McLuhan on Maui, recorded on June 13, 2011. That last 37 minutes was really good. I enjoyed that. So far, it's been an awesome show so far, incredible music. By the way, the music was began with about 8 minutes of Frank doing a song called Montreal in 1972 with not his Grand Wazoo band. That's a big band. He had a little spin-off of that called the Petite Wazoo, the Little Wazoo. He toured around, did a few gigs on the East Coast, including Montreal, with an awesome band, and that was that. And then we heard his old 50s music, Love My Life, done on Ruben and the Jets.
redone, you know, 20 years later with Bobby Martin, the falsetto that Carol always falls for. Bobby Martin's falsetto, he's very good. So we have Janine Graham, we'll have the next hour of talk about everything. We got that out of the way. And then we'll hear, and Tracy, yes, in the third hour, if you guys can't listen to Renz, if you have to subscribe, I mean, guys got millions of listeners, they have to subscribe, boy, you'll have content here. It'll be a new mom. So back to Bill with his sound bites.